Okay. All right, so I'm going to spin you a little tale today about five states that went on a journey of rolling out a vaccine ordering module. And so this is sort of a lessons learned and best practices for these five states. And the states that I'm featuring today are Alaska, Arizona, Idaho, Louisiana, and Mississippi, and I know that there are representatives from all of those states, I think, except Idaho in the audience today. So as we go through the presentation, if you have state-specific questions for them, then they're here and can also kind of elaborate on their own experiences. And, of course, I'm your narrator for the session. So where our story begins. So back in 2007-ish when BIMBIP was announced and the concept for VODs, which was the early version of the CDC vaccine ordering replacement, the iWeb Consortium got together and we hashed out all of the requirements of what a vaccine ordering management system should look like when it's rolled into an IIS. So we came out with tons and tons of requirements and then set about developing what this system was going to become. And so in 2008, VOMS, which is the Vaccine Ordering and Management System, was born. And at that time, we were integrating with VACMAN. And so when Washington and West Virginia, who were sort of the first to dive off the cliff in 2008 and 2009, when they first rolled out, of course, the interface was with VACMAN, and VTRAC still hadn't been fully conceptualized at that point. But then in 2010, we had five states who decided that in preparation for VTRAC, once that was announced and started to take form, they wanted to get ahead of that a little bit, get their vaccine management system rolled out and ready to go so that when VTRAC did come, they'd be set up and be ready to start interfacing with the new system. And then, of course, in late 2010, here comes VTRAC, and then by late 2010, VOMS and VTRAC are hooked up. So as Jan is going to be presenting in her session tomorrow as one of the featured sessions, she can tell you how that pilot has kind of rolled out and how that goes. But right now, Washington is directly interfacing with VTRAC, and I think I've heard rumors that that another state is getting ready to roll on. Is that a secret, by the way? Wink if it's a secret. Okay. So anyway, VOMS then, the basic feature functionality of VOMS is you have all of the core things like being able to place an order, receive an order, and then also there's all sorts of custom configurations. So as our states started to really implement this and get a feel for the requirements, there was a need for all sorts of different ways to handle that. So vaccine choice, some states allow providers to have a choice, others don't. Some have limited choice, or they allow the provider to make a choice, but they have to stick with it for 6 months. So we needed to have a full gamut of flexibility for how to handle those. And as we, if you have questions for the states that are represented in this presentation, they can kind of tell you how their choice works or why they made the decisions that they did. And then standard versus depot, Alaska is one of the states that we'll be talking about today. And when all of the third-party distribution models came into play, Alaska, because they're so remote and they have some places that are only accessible by bush plane and that sort of thing, they still use a true depot model where they put a bulk order in, it all comes into their state depot, and then the providers order out of the state and they fulfill it directly there out of Anchorage. And so we needed to have some flexibility there in how we do that. And then Mississippi also uses sort of a hybrid depot for some of their public vaccines. So there's some flexibility there. And then local level approvers. Some states like to have their local health jurisdictions or their local public health offices sort of do a cursory review for the providers in their area. So we needed to accommodate a local level approving system and also the orders that were going directly to a state BFC program. So there's a lot of configuration that had to come into play to be able to accommodate everyone's business processes. And then, of course, there's full accountability features, all of the inventory transactions, lot number summary information, cold chain reporting, and how did we automate that and put it into part of the ordering process and these ordering screens with the automation. And then also this past year, new features were added, like the economic order quantity. How do we limit people by the frequency and time period that they can order, and also recommended quantity, the newer measures and guidance on that. Allocation management, if you had a shortage, how are you going to limit allocations by provider and what they can order, and kind of keep track of some of that allocation restriction as needed. And, of course, the interface currently with VACMAN and soon to be VTRAC. So there's sort of a little switch in there, and when states are ready, they can split the switch and begin submitting to VTRAC versus the VACMAN standard. And then, of course, the online provider enrollment agreement was also added, and we've got a couple of states that are rolling that out. And then just a whole barrage of management tools for people at the state level and how they can manage the program appropriately. So this is just a couple of screenshots for you so that you can kind of get a feel for what this might look like. But this is where the provider orders. So they log in, they place their order. You can also force a reconciliation ahead of time so that you can get their specific inventory by lot number, or in this case, this is the version where you do the aggregate entry. So we have some states where the states aren't having the providers use the registry for their inventory tracking, so this allows them to put in an aggregate total and go from there. And you can see sort of in the middle there's three buttons with a blue bar, and that's like a three-month history of their accountability. So if you were to click on that, you'd see 3 months' worth of this provider's history to review to make sure that their ordering is correct and that they're not doing any too much outlying action. And then, of course, the state fills the order, and the question came up about, you know, can you adjust it? And this is where the state would adjust that order. So if somebody had ordered 1,000 and you really thought that they only needed to have 500, you know, you could adjust that down and whatever needed to happen before the order was officially approved and sent on to either VTRAC or VACMAN. And then through the magic of television, of course, it goes through the VTRAC VACMAN, goes to McKesson, McKesson sends the file back, you import it, and now the provider has this order. And if you had imported the McKesson file, then you would see here exactly how many doses of each lot number and manufacturer and whatever that you received. And so this is what the states were rolling out then last year to their providers, is this whole process of ordering and order fulfillment. And so also, of course, in 2010, this is where VOMs and VTRAC found love. And so, you know, I think like all of the hype and the buildup, everybody was sort of gearing up and how bad is it going to be, how much is going to be involved. But once it was all said and done, you know, for those of you that are they're going to be making the transition, we found that it actually wasn't that bad. You know, there's a little bit of a spec change, so, you know, VACMAN to VTRAC. But then, you know, there's a new emphasis on tracking the physical inventory, so that's good. You know, we've always been, at least in the registry, had the capability to track physical inventory. Now we have the opportunity to report it. So this was all very positive. This new focus on the NDC number has actually turned out to be very helpful as well. It helps a lot with the vaccine clarification and also the formulation and package tracking is really nice to have that unique NDC number identifier. So, you know, we all kind of got a little bit scared about it at first, but it's really turned out to be a good thing, and I think in the long run it's going to have a lot of benefits. And then the dose volume tracking and the whole line level order ID, we had that running in the background, and now it's going to be more visible since VTRAC is really reliant on that line level ID, and also the ability to put an urgency order priority on the line level listing. And then there's some other stuff that's coming soon, and I think Jan kind of might have some suggestions in her presentation for sort of, you know, where this goes next. But this is really, all of this activity around vaccine ordering and management has really led up to this interface with VTRAC. So now for the heroes of our story and sort of what they did and their lessons learned. And this is an overview of where these states are with implementation and kind of gives you an idea of how many orders they're processing through their VFC program on a weekly basis. And the states of Alaska, Mississippi, and Idaho have 100% of their orders are being processed through the online ordering tool. So every single vaccine order in the state is coming in through the interface with the registry in some way. And then you can see on the far right side, this is the percentage of providers that are actually entering directly into the registry. So you can see that Mississippi and Idaho are about at 100%, which means that the providers are all interfacing directly with that vaccine order screen that I showed a minute ago. Whereas in Alaska, for instance, they have some state depot staff who receive the order, but then they go in and enter it online and have the application process that for them. But they're actually doing the data entry, not the provider at this time. And then Louisiana and Arizona are in various stages of rolling out. So they went sort of the pilot approach. They didn't go cold turkey and just jump right out there and start training all their providers. They sort of took more of a methodical pilot and begin to grow on that. So they're still in process and working their way towards 100%, which is ultimately their goal, to start having everyone, all of the providers, enter their own orders. So Alaska is our first one up. And so when you... As I said, they're using the depot model, and the people at the depot are entering the orders. But once the orders are placed, the system then, they go through, they approve the orders, and when they approve the orders, it's actually populating it directly because we have a depot side of the house in the system, which then applies the lot number and manufacturer that they're actually pulling from their pick fridge to fulfill the order for the provider. And so so that kind of makes them unique and different in that respect. But the rollout strategy is that this year, and what I understand from Jerry, who's not in the room, but Alicia is. And so anyway, they're actually getting ready to launch their pilot next week when they go back. So it says in 2011, but it's actually next week that they're going to go and really start to roll this out. And then eventually, by the end of the year, they hope to have all of them entering all of their own orders directly. And the training strategy that they're planning to use is the online training methodology so that providers can be trained using online methods versus in-person. And so Arizona, they use a pretty purist model where the provider orders, the state approves, it gets sent to VACMAN, and then the provider receives the order. What Arizona is not doing at this time is they're not using the registry for inventory tracking, and so they're not having the providers track all of their inventory in the registry and report that. So at this time, they're able to receive their order and vaccinate, but this is not the sole inventory management mechanism. And then their rollout strategy was that they started with the county health departments and kind of spent some time with them. Once that was successful, then they moved on to hospitals and now are starting to get ready to roll out to all of the other providers. And they'd started their rollout as part of the annual re-enrollment process so that it's all it's combined with other processes that they're doing and they don't have to have two separate campaigns going. And then Arizona's strategy, which is going to be interesting because it'll factor into their lessons learned here in a minute, but Arizona started out with in-person training sessions, and they took it really slow with the pilot sites, but as they were starting to bring on hospitals and providers, they were using training videos and manuals, and as you'll see in their lessons learned, they actually found that this was the better way to go because people who self-taught themselves were more likely to retain the information than somebody who sat in front of a trainer and then were expected to go back and replicate it. So Idaho also is very similar to the way that Arizona does it, but the difference is that Idaho does track all of their inventory online. So the provider does their order, it goes through, McKesson file is imported, the provider receives that order, and then they do all of their vaccine tracking and management completely through the registry. So, you know, they're really fully utilizing that aspect from start to finish. And their rollout strategy was actually initiated by a legislative mandate that came out of statute during their 2010 legislative session that said that they were going to establish a vaccine assessment board to kind of help offset their change from being universal status to needing to find other funding sources. So they established this vaccine assessment fund, and as part of that, it mandates online accountability by all providers. So they use that to sort of launch this and say, okay, this is coming, and you will use the registry to place your orders. And the way that they did that is also through a large WebEx campaign. They also did some on-site and in-person, but they were basically running two WebEx sessions a week with training by providers and then had a go-live date of July 1 last year when they flipped the switch and 100% of orders started going through the registry. Louisiana, also very similar to what we just talked about, where, you know, it's sort of a pure model of order and receipt. Their rollout strategy is still ongoing, and they did start also with the public clinics and then started with high volume and are sort of working their way down. So by the end of the year, Louisiana also hopes to have 100% of their providers submitting electronically through the registry. And they used on-site personal training as a method and also regionalized trainings, because in Louisiana they have regional consultants that sort of oversee the providers and their education in that area. So that was a strategy that worked for them. And then finally, of the five states, is Mississippi. And Mississippi is going to be rolling out the online provider enrollment features this year, where they're going to be managing the actual enrollment and re-enrollment process through the registry. And again, they have sort of a routine order process, but they started with public health departments first and then moved on to private providers. But they actually went with a full on-site provider training strategy, where they were training directly with providers in order to get them brought on. So what they have learned, their lessons learned that are worth sharing. Again, as I stated about Arizona, that the self-taught staff actually did better and retained more information than those who were that were done in person. So it seems that the hands-on approach had a better response and better retention rate than those who participated in a person-to-person training. And the next one isn't necessarily that surprising, but the younger office staff were easier to train and also seem to have better retention. So they're more technologically savvy, they're more interested in the technology, whereas you know, some of the older nurses weren't quite ready to jump on with this whole online ordering thing. So and then the other message, too, is that when you start, have your messages fairly clear, because Arizona invested a fair amount of time in creating training videos and that sort of thing. But as the process went on, they started to tweak their process. Well, you know, if you had said that something was going to be required at one point and now isn't, or it wasn't and now is, then you have to go back and redo all of your training videos, all of your training materials and stuff. So, you know, I think the message here is to really put some thought into exactly how you're going to do this and what you want this to look like before you start rolling out and investing a lot in your training. And then for Louisiana, one of their lessons learned was just to make sure that the providers are ordering correctly, because, you know, you've got this electronic interface, and there's still mistakes that happen, and there is still a human component to reviewing and making sure that the providers are ordering appropriate amounts, ordering the correct formulation. You know, so there is still a lot of human error factor that can come into this. You know, the computer's only, or the application is only as smart as it can be, but you know, there is still a need for the human oversight in making sure that people are ordering correctly. And then making reconciliation mandatory each time a provider places an order. So what this means is basically requiring a physical order count before they place an order, just so that you always have a good feel for what that provider has in inventory and that it matches what the registry or the immunization information system is showing. All right, and then these are a few little tidbits from Idaho. You know, keep the training to less than 2 hours. Hour and a half to 2 hours is about the maximum training time that a person can stand. So, you know, try and stick with that. The second bullet sort of echoes what Arizona was saying. Figure out what your message is, have a definite plan, move forward, stay on schedule, and then implement as planned. And make sure that everybody is there, because if they just send one person and you're expecting them to go back and train everybody else, you know, there's a lot that can get lost in translation. So try and bring everybody that needs to be trained to the table in a practice there at the same time. Lots of handouts, things that people can refer to. That also sort of goes back to what Arizona was saying, that people who are self-taught and have materials to refer back to tend to do better than others. And then at the very beginning, have the provider start with whatever inventory they have. You know, make sure that their inventory is correct, that they've taken a physical inventory and that it matches, and then that way it'll just sort of perpetuate itself from there with order, receipt, and fulfillment and vaccine administration. And then, you know, for Mississippi, if the inventory is not maintained properly, of course, you're going to have issues, because it's going to throw off the ordering. It's going to say that they've got more inventory than they do, and that can always lead to big problems. So they need to keep up with it, whether it's through reconciliation or through active vaccinating and decrementing of doses, but they have to stay on top of it so that you always have the best information available to you. And then finally, just make sure that all of the state users that are going to be helping them, both in the VFC program, the help desk, your technology help desk for your immunization information systems, that everybody is really familiar with the application that's trying to be rolled out, because the providers have a lot of questions. And so, you know, it's good to make sure that all your state staff fully understand what the application is going to do as well. And then these are the primary contacts. These people aren't necessarily in the room and stuff today, but these are folks that can get you answers in each of these state scenarios that I walked you through today. So that's what I've got.
Why don't we go ahead and take a few minutes if you have questions for Danielle, and if we get done with those before the top of the hour, we can open it up for other questions as well.
Okay.
Yes. How does your system currently manage what is on contract? Because the vaccines go on and off contract, and how will it do it in VTRAX?
We have a full administrative listing page. It's currently called the VACMAN vaccine settings page, but that's where you would go in and define all of the NDC numbers, the vaccine formulations, the vaccine types, the contract number, the ordering intention. You know, all of that stuff gets defined on sort of a master administrative screen that only particular users have access to and the ability to manipulate. So then when the pricing changes or whatever, you just inactivate that one and then enter a new version of that. So it keeps a history, and also you know, allows you to specify what all of your active codes are that you're using.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. When you talk about reconciliation, are you talking about doing some internal checking for the doses that were administered and doses that are reported?
Right. So, you know, I mean, so you've got providers, obviously, that are using their EHRs. You've got some who are interacting with the system directly and entering, you know, all of their doses, recording them against patients, and it's decrementing automatically. So the reconciliation tool really says, you know, the registry says you've got 100 doses, and you actually have 120 on hand. So it allows you to specify, you know, that you have 20 more or less than you said you did, and a reason for that. And it gives the administrators of the system a full tracking of how that information was adjusted, plus or minus, and the reason why. So it's really a calculation of what the registry says that you should have versus what you actually have in your refrigerator as a physical inventory. Did that answer your question?
Yes.
Oh, okay.
And that's a free text that they will type in the reason.
The reconciliation screen is just sort of an aggregate, easy form to do that. They could go in by lot number and actually pick, you know, each lot number and manually adjust it, or this aggregate entry screen allows them to kind of mass process any differences that they might have in what the system has versus what's in their fridge.
I don't know. Hi, my name is Lisa from Wyoming, and I don't know if my question's for you or for some of the other states, but I'm just curious, with the inventory that the providers have in their IIS, are those input from the providers, or do the states use the shipping logs to input their inventory for them?
Okay, so the initial inventory would either be put in by the provider, but I'll let the state say whether they offered to do that on behalf of any of their providers. Did you, Judy?
In Louisiana, we actually, from about a year ago when we knew we were going to bomb, we started requiring and teaching our providers that it was going to be mandatory that they use the inventory portion of the IIF. And we really had good results. Once they did it, and now that we're rolling out bombs, they love it so much that it's, because everything can be done on one page instead of having to do it individually when they get the order in, it's all received on the same page. So they've been real receptive to it. But yes, we mandate now that they, and if we do any kind of HL7, it's mandated that they have to decrement that inventory just as well.
Tammy, Christy, did you guys require the providers to enter it as sort of their baseline, or did you do it for them?
No, the providers entered their baseline.
Okay.
What they have. And then, of course, we use the McKesson file so that it's there and all they have to
Yeah, so once the baseline is entered, then it just becomes maintenance, mm-hmm. you know, so.
And one more comment, as Danielle said, some of them said the younger people. the biggest problem we actually have had is when they receive the vaccine back from McKesson, it's all there on one sheet for them to receive it, you know, take your doses and receive it, and it's all just a click to populate their inventory. But you would be surprised at how many of ours still want to go into each individual vaccine and say, I received 20 doses today, and fill all that in there. Themselves. So that's really the biggest thing we've had is getting them accustomed to being able to accept it so fast as opposed to doing it all.
Hello. Hi. Can you say anything about how this inventory system is going to interact with HL7 messages when vaccine information comes in?
Well, so our system, and we have you know, several states who are using that right now, and we do have the system set up to be able to decrement doses as they come in. So if a provider has an HL7 feed and it's coming in, as long as it has a lot number manufacturer that we are matching against inventory in the registry, then it will decrement that appropriately as an administered dose. Of course, if it's historical, you know, it's just going to come in as historical. But anything that's coming in with the administered flag and a lot number manufacturer that matches what's supposedly in that provider's virtual fridge, then it will decrement those and show as a dose is administered. So then that way, if there is a lot recall or they want to go back and figure out, you know, who received a particular lot number, or they're just trying to reconcile their doses administered against the doses in the fridge, they can pull a line listing of who received that particular lot and be able to see it.
I wanted to go back to the VTRAX processing of an order. Mm-hmm. When you said the provider, they will internet it, their inventory, then they would say the amount of doses that they would need. And then you said CDC would determine the recommendations of the amount of doses that they would need. Or,
no.
So I was kind of confused.
And is that question for me or for...
No.
Oh, okay. Well, in our system, I mean, once you've got your inventory entered and you start to have some sort of a routine history of ordering or vaccinating, and there's a record of how many your typical doses used are, then the system has an algorithm in it to generate what a recommended quantity for you might be for that period. So then that way you can place an order, and the system will determine whether you're above or beyond or below that particular threshold of what is acceptable, I guess, for that provider. And so, but yeah, it's system-generated recommended quantity. Well, we have two ways to support that, and then I'll let Michael talk about what his capabilities are. But we do it both ways. There's one where it can be based on your history of doses administered, which will allow for the seasonal ebbs and flows of back to school and flu season and that sort of thing. Or there's also based on order history. So if a provider is not tracking their inventory in the system and they're just using it to place their order and receive their order, then it can be based on that user history. So we know that every time you order, you're ordering 100 doses. So if you order 1,000 doses, then you have a problem, you know. But if you're routinely ordering 100 just back to back, then it doesn't send up any red flags. So it could be either way.
And what if the grantee is actually placing the order for the provider?
It all behaves the same way. The only difference is that they probably have an auto-receive function that we have set. So then the providers that are using their EHR, or even if, you know, like in Alaska's case where they're entering 100% of the doses or 100% of the orders, it's just the routine process of placing the order, receiving it, but they're just doing it on behalf of the provider.
Okay.
And then the provider would have that inventory available to them when they go to vaccinate a child or adult, that it would be in the system, and they would be able to apply that lot number to that vaccination.
Yeah, what we do in New York City is very similar. The CDC does not approve the orders. We send the orders to the CDC, and the CDC... In VTRAX will be basically the same way it currently happens in VACMAN. We send the order to VACMAN, and the CDC processes and ships that order. So in VTRAX will be the same, is that they, you know, we send the order to the CDC, and they ship that order. And I think that's it. That's it. How long does it take to be shipped to the provider? My understanding is very quickly. I mean, once the CDC has that order, McKesson is very good at shipping the orders. You know, they get shipped out. You know, as long as they have it, you know, in stock, and that it goes to providers. And like the rule is 3 to 5 working days, but I think it's closer to three days than the 5 days. You know, it depends on the shipping day, depends on the day of the week, if there's a holiday. But it's, you know, it gets out there once, you know, the orders are in their system.
And I will say something too about the McKesson file too, because that's what we've been interacting with most directly. Because the VACMAN version, like once VACMAN gets the information, it's about 5 days stale, whereas the McKesson file comes the day of. So we've been pretty reliant on that McKesson file. Now, VTRAX is supposed to have the capability of being able to generate that inventory file back to us, but it's going to be interesting to see how fast VTRAX has that file and, you know, whether that becomes the new standard or whether McKesson file, you know, because at least right now we're still using the McKesson file until the VTRAX piece gets into place, but then it'll depend on what that lag or delay is going to look like.
Yeah, we have the same problem. Like, it's shipped, but we don't know it's shipped. I mean, so like, the provider knows they got it before we know they got it. So, you know, so it's kind of a problem. You know, like, they ask us, like, where is that order? And maybe that order has been shipped, but we actually don't have. Eventually, we'll get the FedEx tracking number. We don't have the FedEx tracking number yet, so like we can't really. We have to then call and find out and like go through that process. But it'd be good to the getting the information back from through the, you know, database back and forth at the CDC. Hopefully, will be better in VTRAX.
And I just want to make one comment on that, and then I think we can have one more question, and I have some closing remarks. We actually get that file, the McKesson shipping file, the day the vaccine arrives. We get an Excel file, so we have it pretty timely.